The following presentation is brought to you by Priority One.
Good evening. The idea that we had here was to spend a few moments at this hour on Wednesday evenings discussing a topic which is certainly very, very precious and of overwhelming significance to most of us here, and that is the topic of our children. Parenting in the 21st century is not such an easy challenge. Ask any parent, and they will tell you that if Tsar Gidel Bonim was ever a factor in the lives of their parents and grandparents, it's that much more in our own lives. The difficulty of raising children is, for many, overwhelming. And therefore, any advice, experience, insights, help that we can get in this area can always be of benefit to everyone. If we think that we are unique in our feeling of the pain of Tsar Gidel Bonim, I refer you to a Meiri that says that there's an opinion that holds that one of the 10 tests of Avraham Avinu, we know that he was tested with 10 major nisyonos, but it's a bit of a question exactly which episodes were the main 10 tests. One of the tests, the Meiri says, was that after he had already given up hope of having children, that he was able to take a wife, Hogor, to put himself into a position of having children that he had already given up hope about having, and to undergo Tsar Gidel Bonim. The willingness, the readiness to undergo the pain and the difficulty of raising children, after a person had already thought at his age he's not going to have to do it, is vise for one of the 10 tests of Avraham Avinu, together with the Kivshan Aish and with Akedas Yitzchok. So we see how difficult, what a test it is, to be able to raise children. Allah has kama v'kama in a world which has seemed to go insane, and where any insanity that exists in this world is instantaneously made available to everyone, practically to everyone on the planet. So the challenge is really great. And the hope was that in these sessions, brief sessions, we would be able to discuss week by week some basic points. I think that there's on our website, they just put up a 10 ways to parent for the 21st century. Maybe that would be the outline of our discussion and try to work through some principles and some advice that might be helpful in dealing with this critical issue. In addition, I've been asked to mention that you're invited to join us for a groundbreaking experience, a parenting expo, which is going to take place the Sunday after this coming Sunday, November 16th, from 6 to 10 p.m. at the Holiday Inn at JFK. If there's an ad below on the website for further information. We live in a world where our children are certainly challenged by many, many different and varied and disturbing difficulties. And if there's a common denominator that can serve as an underlying security for the survival of our children during these circumstances and the passing through these tests that they have to go through, I think that would be to say that if our children are happy, if they're happy at home, and if they're happy in school, and if they're happy amongst their friends, and if they're happy in their shul, and if they're happy in their community, they're not going anyplace. This is where they want to stay. Nobody in today's world wants to jeopardize their happiness. And if we as parents or teachers or friends or rabbis or relatives or community members are perceived by our children as the source, as causing their happiness, then we become the most important people in their lives. And I think that this is a very, very valid analysis of the situation. The problem is that nobody, many people, most people, find it difficult to find this happiness. Everyone's looking for it. More money is spent, more books are written, more seminars are given, searching for happiness, and yet so few people seem to have found it. I think the reason may very well be that we don't know what we're looking for. If you don't know what you're looking for, you don't stand much of a chance. What is happiness? What are we looking for? We want to be happy, but if we don't know what that really is, it becomes very difficult to find. And if we turn to the Loshon HaKodesh, which defines for us the essence of concepts in this world, the Shoresh in Loshon Kodesh being the defining expression of what the word means, one of the highest forms of happiness in Loshon HaKodesh is Osher, spelt with an Aleph. David HaMelech said, Ashrei Yoshvei Beisecho. Happy is the person who sits in the house of Hashem. In fact, David HaMelech felt that that was the ultimate happiness because he said, Achas shoalti me'eis Hashem oiso avake shivti be'eis Hashem. He says, I have one request of Hashem. I want to sit in his house. I want to be close to him. Ashrei Yoshvei Beisecho, Osher, that sense of feeling, that fulfillment, that happiness, that's the ultimate. What's the shoresh of the word Osher? And it seems that the shoresh comes from Ishur, the Asher, to validate. Happiness is about validation. Happiness is about feeling good about oneself. And those who make me happy, that is, my parents who make me feel good about myself, my teachers who make me feel good about myself, and my friends who make me feel good about myself, and unfortunately bad friends can also make us feel good about ourselves, and that's part of the problem, and my community, whoever makes me feel good about myself is the source of my happiness, is the source of my feeling good, my validation, making me happy. And those people become the most important people in my life. And the connection with those people becomes the most important connection in my life. And therefore, it's so critical as parents, maybe more critical than anything else, that we are making our children happy so that they feel happy. But the process is really that of validation, of making them feel good about themselves. And when they feel good about themselves, they are truly fulfilled and truly happy, and they are ready to connect, to maintain the connection, to strengthen that connection, and to guarantee the assurance and the continuity of that connection with their parents forever. Because parents are then the source of their happiness. How do we make our children feel good about themselves? How do we validate them in order to bring them to this state of happiness? Well, I guess one simple idea, which is sometimes not so simple to convey, is that our children are our number one priority. This is the priority of our lives. You know, we don't live in that generation anymore, but probably in our parents, maybe in our grandparents' generation, the feeling was we live for our children. Our grandparents, our great-grandparents, they lived for their children. They went to work for their children, and they worked extra jobs for their children, and everything they did was for their children. Today, we're too busy and too involved. There's too much else going on. And there isn't enough of a connection, of a family tie to really give that sense that we're living for our children. But living for our children conveyed a very important message to these kids that we make them feel good about themselves. They're valid. They're so valid. They're the essence. They're the focal point of our existence. Today, we have to try to recapture some of that sense that our children are the focal point of our existence, that they are our number one priority, that they are the most important people in the world for us. The story is told of a young boy in a yeshiva who was a major, major discipline problem. There practically wasn't a day where he wasn't asked to leave a few classes. He was in the principal's office every day and getting the same speech over and over and over again. And as soon as he left the office, he's back in the class and once again misbehaving. And this was going on for months and months and months and months. Finally, once more, another time, he was sent to the principal's office. And this time he came out a different person. He was obedient, he was disciplined, he was learning, he was involved, he was engaged. He was another human being, a different human being altogether. And everybody was very curious as to what happened. What's going on over here? Why is this going? What happened? What changed? What was different? And nobody had any clue. By the end of the year, somebody decided to ask the principal, "Hey, what happened over here? What's going on? Why? What did you do differently this time?" And the principal was just as confused as everybody else is. I made the same speech to him that I've made 150 times before. What changed? What was different? No idea. The principal was very curious, so he calls in this young man, and he's a young boy, and he says to him, "You know, I spoke to you 150 times, and every time was the same thing, and every time the next day, well, the same day, the same tzoras. What was different this time?" And the young kid smiles and he says, "You were talking to me as usual, and your secretary came into the room and said that you have a very, very important phone call. And you responded and you said, 'I'm speaking to a most important individual now, and I cannot interrupt to take the phone call.'" That was it. That was the difference. That was the turning point in this young man's life. His principal, instead of reprimanding him, instead of scolding him, instead of disciplining him, instead of crying and begging that he should behave, he validated him. He made him feel good about himself. And that was enough to enable him to control himself. And that was enough for him not to want to ever have to fall in the lose the grace of this principal, who was such an important individual in his life that he made him feel good about himself. And we have constant opportunities to make our children feel good about themselves, but it doesn't come just by saying before they go to sleep at night, "Love you," or we hang up the phone, "Love you, but we really have no time to talk to you. We really are very, very busy." When we speak, the phone and the BlackBerry and the telephone and the who knows what is constantly on our minds. The Shabbos table, we have time to talk, but by that time we're so tired that we fall asleep before the soup or after the soup. It has to be something where they feel that connection, that when we speak to them, that we're speaking to the most important person in our lives. And love of a parent is very powerful, because love validates. Love validates because why do I love a person? The Sipurna says because we appreciate his qualities. We love qualities. So when I love someone, I love qualities. Parental love can be very validating, but it's not the whole story. Because if a parent loves a child, so all right, but my mother loves me. You know, my grandmother loves me. Like, what else is new? That's what they're supposed to be doing. But it can devastate if they feel it's not there. Because then that's the person who's supposed to love me, the person who's programmed to love me, the person who genetically should be loving me, who's paid to love me, doesn't think that I'm so important, doesn't seem to love me, I don't feel the love, and therefore I must really be terrible. And that's invalidating, that destroys that sense of feeling good about themselves in the worst way. So we have to be very careful to show, to express in real actions rather than just words the love that we have for our children. And that having been said, the love and respect that others will show them, and to whatever extent we can put them in situations where they're getting that respect. Just spoke to a young person whose greatest complaint and greatest lack of inspiration for Yiddishkeit was the sense that the teachers in this particular school speak in a disparaging way to the students. They don't speak with any, they're not sensitive, they're, They're not nice. They're rough. They're something. They're looking down. They're not. And this is enough to say that I can't take it. They don't make me feel good about myself. Therefore, anything that they teach me and that they have to say is really irrelevant to me. So this is very important. Now, another point that's important in making our kids feel good about themselves is finding ways that they should succeed. Orchestrating success is a critical ingredient in providing opportunities for them to feel good about themselves. When a person succeeds, I have succeeded, I accomplished, I'm worthy. Look what I've accomplished. I can start to feel good about myself. And anyone who provides me the opportunities to accomplish is part of that team that's making me feel good about myself, and I want to continue my relationship with them. However, there's a piece of advice here which I think is also very, very important. And that is, it's critical for our children, yeshiva children, growing up in the frum community and frum homes, to feel good about themselves in Torah, in Yiddishkeit, in mitzvahs, in something that has to do with Yahadus. Now, it's true if they feel good about themselves in football or in baseball or in music or in art, that it does something for their ego. That's true. But it doesn't validate them as much as feeling accomplished in Torah. Because a yeshiva kid who's grown up in a religious home, in a religious community, has at a very young age internalized the message that Yiddishkeit is what's important. This is what really counts. This is where it's really at. This is the real essence of human living. And therefore, if I don't find some success in that, I can be devastated. My self-esteem, my self-image, my validation, my sense of validation can be ruined. So it's very important. It's important for those that are not learning to have success in other areas. It's important for everybody to have success and recreation and so forth. But let's not make the mistake to think that that success in outside of Torah areas can substitute for a success in Torah. And even for those that seem less than academically capable in Torah studies, I think that we have to be very careful before we write them off as mediocre or failures. I must say that in the last week alone, I must have dealt with probably at least 7 situations where a student who was being written off as less than capable, schwach, a little bit not as intelligent, certainly not as sharp as his brothers and sisters were, and the reality was discovered to be a highly intelligent young man or young woman, but the learning style was different. And the classroom learning did not work for this individual. Oftentimes, and in many cases we find that today, that the size of the classes with the amount of material that's being presented to them, the massive extent of the information, is much too much for certain types of minds. There are very intelligent minds who need to think more, who need to analyze more, who need to penetrate to a deeper level of understanding before they can deal with concepts, with ideas, with issues. And sometimes if they can't do that, they just feel that they're just lost and they don't get it. And they internalize this as blame and as stupidity and as their own limitations. When in reality, more than anything else, it may be that their style is a little bit different. And in a more analytical, interactive, stimulating, challenging environment, rather than more information and memorization of the information, these very students, who we almost wrote off and thought that they couldn't handle it, can flourish and sometimes soar to the top. And if you trace back in some of these cases, to one, did they ever have a good year? Yeah, this kid that I spoke to, the parent today, in the 8th grade, they had a good year. There was a different kind of a Rebbe there. It was a different kind of a learning. Or when I was in this school for a short period of time, I was successful there, but after that I couldn't. Because over there, there was the type of learning. There was the type of atmosphere. It was a smaller class. There was more interaction, more give and take, whatever it may be. So we can't write off our children academically. until we have really tested the various different learning options in order to make sure that we find the one that can help them to feel good about themselves. But even if we don't discover or have not yet discovered their abilities or their talents to succeed in Torah, we still have to find in the related Torah areas. They may not succeed as well in learning, but they could develop an appreciation for tefillah. They develop an appreciation for chesed. They develop an appreciation for other mitzvos, for tzedakah, for different types of communal social service activities, helping. These things, because they're spiritual, because they're Jewish, because they're religious, because they're related to the purpose of our existence rather than just our materialistic world, can give them that sense of validation and satisfaction and fulfillment as well. So these are some of the ideas. I think that it's very, very important to focus on, that we have to realize that our children must perceive that they are the most important people in the world to us. And we must do everything that we can to validate them, to be their validators, so that we remain critical and central to their life and their feeling good, and so that they feel validated, so that they're comfortable in what they're doing, and they're not going to run any place. And I'd like to close this discussion about parenting with a story that it must have been written in some Reader's Digest someplace many years ago, about a young, cool, really with it kid who just got a new sports car and convertible, and he comes on this Saturday night to pick up a friend. And his friend was more of a nebuch, not a very popular kid, a little bit withdrawn, a little bit awkward. And he was so honored that this cool guy and class leader comes to his house on a Saturday night to pick him up and to take him for a ride. And as he was going out to the car, this nebuch kid, his parents walk out after him, and they come and they talk to him and they say, "Where are you going? And how long have you been driving? And do you have insurance? And what time are you going to be back? And please don't drive too fast. And have you ever had any accidents? And so forth and so on." And this kid, this nebuch kid, is turning colors and so embarrassed that his parents are making him into such a schmata in front of this cool guy that picked him up. He gets into the front seat of the car and they zoom away, and this cool kid turns to his little friend and he says to him, he says, "Gee, I wish my parents cared about me the way your parents care about you." So on the one hand, we will talk, hopefully, Be'ez Hashem, about giving our kids a little space. But on the other hand, we should know that when they see, or when someone can point out to them how much we really care about them, that can make all of the difference in their lives. Good evening.
Yeah, you're gonna go right into the
guitar. That's what I do.
Yeah.
We have time. Yeah, we said 9 o'clock.
You said 9 o'clock.
Okay, stand by 5 minutes, and we start the shir in the Chavis Halavavos in Bitochen. And I think a lot of people feel that we need an extra measure of Bitochen these days. And remember, am I still on?
Yep.
Remember, on Sunday, November 16th, between 6 and 10 p.m. at the Holiday Inn at JFK, the Parenting Expo, sponsored by Priority One. And if you click on the ad below, you'll find out more information. Also on the website is an outline, I guess, of this discussion that we're going to have, and that is 10 Ways to Parent for the 21st Century. You can find that there as well, including all types of other publications and audio material available on parenting. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this presentation brought to you by Priority One. please visit us online at www.priority-1.org. That's priority-1.org, where you can download free audio and publications on parenting, teaching, and teens at risk. For more information or to make a donation, please visit us online or call 800-33-4EVER.